The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Biden era in U.S. politics is over as Donald Trump was sworn into the White House on Monday. From Biden's election to the U.S. Senate in 1972 to 8 years as vice president under Barack Obama and eventually his final political years in the Oval Office, the curtain call on Joe Biden's career came as the helicopter took off from the Capitol on Monday. After promising to return the soul of the nation in 2020, Joe Biden fell short because he leaves office with ratings far more negative than when he started. I'm joined now by Chris Whipple, author of The Fight of His Life, Inside Joe Biden's White House. Good morning, Chris.
Good to be with you.
Now, just thinking back to Monday, I thought that Joe Biden cut something of a tragic figure as Trump was inaugurated.
I think you're absolutely right. Biden will be thought of as a tragic figure in history, I think. On the one hand, he had a remarkable record, maybe one of the most consequential for a first-term American president. He came into office and pulled the economy out of a free fall, saw the country through a once-in-a-century pandemic, passed major bipartisan legislation in a 50-50 Congress, no mean feat, rallied NATO to face down Vladimir Putin in Ukraine. Quite a record, but of course, I think to pick up your metaphor, his fatal flaw really was his inability to recognize that he needed to get out of the race sooner than he did, and I think in history, he will be remembered as a president who opened the door to the return of Donald Trump. Mm.
Now, watching Trump's speech on Monday, it was almost like a ritual humiliation of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris sitting there and listening to him basically spout untruths about the legacy of Biden.
Absolutely true. I mean, one thing that is clear, despite all of the assertions by many of his followers and his team that there is a new Trump. This is the old Trump, maybe the old Trump magnified on steroids, because it was, as you say, it was a kind of humiliation of Biden and Harris. It was dark. It was dystopian. It was full of lies. And so, you know, I think the real question going forward is, there's no new Trump, clearly, when it comes to the performative aspect of the job. But is there a new Trump when it comes to executing his agenda? And I think that's going to be the real test.
Now, there's something of the Teflon Trump about Donald, because, for instance, the evacuation of American troops from Afghanistan, which went really catastrophically wrong. But the seeds for that evacuation were sown by the deal that Trump cut with the Taliban. And yet nothing sticks to Trump.
No, it's absolutely true. You know, that expression of the Teflon president was first applied to Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s. But Trump is coated with something much more powerful and impermeable than Teflon. Because again, you know, during his campaign, as we all saw, the more outrageous he was on the stump, the more people seemed to like him. What was supposed to be a whisker close election wound up, hardly a landslide, but it was, he won the popular vote by 1.5%. He won all the battleground states. So you're quite right that he seems to be. He seems to defy the ordinary laws of American politics.
The question of whether Biden could have done a lot better, for example, on the border issues, migration issues, he put his vice president in charge at the early stages of his administration. And it has to be said, maybe for reasons of race, but she did not shine in that role.
No, she didn't. But there's a real misconception about her role. She was never in charge of the border, but the distinction was lost on American voters. What she was put in charge of was the so-called Northern Triangle. In other words, trying to address the root causes of immigration, but she was never the border czar, quote unquote. So that was somewhat unfair. But, you know, all is fair in love and political campaigning. And she was, that certainly became, was wrapped around her neck. but I think that the first 2 years for her as vice president were a struggle. She finally hit her stride, I think, in the last year or two when she found her voice, really speaking about women's reproductive rights, I think.
The question of whether or not, though, Joe Biden delegated enough authority and activity to her, which, you know, if he didn't, it was probably contributing to her presidentially doomed campaign.
I don't think so. I think maybe just the opposite. I think that the more she was associated with Joe Biden, the worse her prospects were in the election. And I think that her real failure was her inability to break with Biden. This was an election where only the so-called change candidate could win. She tried to be the change candidate, but not hard enough. She talked about the future. But I think she really needed to make a break with Biden and to acknowledge that inflation was a terrible problem and that she had a plan to fix it and maybe distance herself from Biden on some other things as well. So I don't think that it was a question of Biden not giving her enough, a big enough role in his administration. That was really the anchor that took her down.
Trump's effrontery is quite remarkable, but also he turned out to be lucky, say, in terms of the Supreme Court.
He was. And really, that was the lasting achievement of his first term. You know, in almost every other respect, he was really incompetent at governing. He has a genius for campaigning, but has never understood the difference between campaigning and governing. So while he was inept on getting laws passed on Capitol Hill and at repealing Obamacare, famously, for example, he made his mark on the Supreme Court. And that's always just a question of timing. And he was lucky, and he absolutely changed the complexion of that court for a generation.
Back to immigration and Joe Biden. Could he have done more on the border? Because we saw in the last months of his presidency that they did tighten things up a bit on the border.
Well, the irony here, of course, is that Biden and Congress cobbled together a very strong border security package and were prepared to pass it and then Donald Trump famously spiked it. He ordered his minions on Capitol Hill to kill a bill that would have helped secure the border. You know, so the fact is that Donald Trump doesn't care about securing the border. What Donald Trump cares about is using that issue as a cudgel with which to win elections and enhance his own power. And he did so. And that was the irony.
In terms of the way the Biden administration approached the election, you know, the old mantra from Michelle Obama, wasn't it, who said they go low, we go high. And
it was Michelle. Yeah.
It was Michelle. Okay. And the idea that instead, when the Democrats are faced with someone like Trump, they go low, we should go lower. And Biden wasn't going to go there.
Yeah, I don't know. You can't really go lower than Trump. I mean, I defy anybody to do that. But there's no question that, you know, they ran this campaign, I think, with kid gloves. To use that old cliche, they brought a knife to a gunfight. Trump takes no prisoners. He absolutely, there's nothing he won't do to win an election. There's nothing he won't do to cling to power, as we saw on January 6, 2021. And I do think that, you know, the ballyhooed, vaunted Biden campaign machine, which became the Harris reelection campaign, was not as tough as they thought they were.
How much do you think the war in Gaza impacted on the Biden campaign? Because certainly some young voters were alienated from the Democrats by virtue of the unwavering support for Netanyahu displayed by the Biden administration.
Yeah, I think it was certainly a black mark on Joe Biden's record, on his foreign policy legacy. To what extent it affected the election, it's hard to say for sure. But I certainly think it did suppress the turnout of younger Biden supporters, voters who would have been Biden supporters if not for Gaza. So I do think it had an impact at the margins. But I think overwhelmingly, this was, you know, as we know, there's been a worldwide rejection of incumbents since the pandemic struck in 2020, something like 40 out of 54 elections, the incumbents have gone down. Two-thirds of Americans think the country is on the wrong track. And I think that was by far the biggest factor.
The question in the end of his decision to finally step down, forced upon him by the likes of Nancy Pelosi, how much did the White House, the people around him, how much did the Democratic establishment know about his faltering abilities?
Well, I think that Biden's inner circle knew or should have known that he was really too old to serve effectively in a second term. And I think history will be hard on them. I think that it was a combination. I mean, it's, you know, your natural tendency if you're in power because of a president, you want to protect him, and that's understandable. But I do think there was an awful lot of wishful thinking. It was really a bunker mentality that Biden's close advisors had. I think that with Congress, it's hard to say. You know, it wasn't clear that Biden was incompetent. We're not talking about Woodrow Wilson here. We're talking about somebody who had excellent days as well as not so good days. So it's a little bit more complicated than that.
I mean, his own analysis of his performance in the debate against Donald Trump. I screwed up. I made a mistake. That's 90 minutes on stage. Look what I've done in 3.5 years was his response to that kind of criticism.
It was delusional and it may be understandable coming from Biden, less understandable coming from his advisors who were seasoned political pros who've been around for years. Now, of course, they had decades of loyalty to the boss. So they were really kind of, you know, when you're in that bubble, somebody once called it like a magnetic force field. It's hard to break away and walk into the Oval Office, close the door and say, "Listen, Mr. President, you sure you're up to this?" That conversation never took place. And it's just remarkable to me, but it's one of the reasons that we are where we are.
He did say, as he campaigned to be president for the first time, that he would be a one-term president and that he saw himself as a transitionary figure from the old guard to a new generation of politicians. What do you think led him to change his mind? Is it simply the trappings of power? You get used to them. Was it those around him? Was it his wife, Jill, who persuaded him, "You can do this"?
I think it's to some extent you get in there and you start getting things done and you think you can keep doing it. And maybe that's natural and maybe that's a human, very human thing. But it also was a hubris. You know, I mean, that's what the office can do to you. And I think that he never explicitly said he'd be a one-term president. He did say on a stage in 2019 that he saw himself as a bridge, nothing more. And of course, that was interpreted that way. It's the only time he ever said it. And all of his close advisors will tell you that it was never, being a transition candidate was never really the plan. I mean, he always planned to run for re-election.
Even though he could do the arithmetic like anybody else and work out how old he would be at that stage, concluding a second term at the age of 86.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just remarkable to me the extent to which you can really talk yourself into almost anything. I mean, this is like, you know, anybody who's had to take the car keys away from your grandfather. This should have been obvious to the people around Biden, but it wasn't.
And that is the question, really, that the Democratic Party has to ask itself. I mean, on the election of Biden, thinking he might be a one-term president or more likely, given age and so on, he would be a one-term president, why they didn't have somebody ready to go, or at least a generation of politicians ready to step into the ring and fight for the nomination.
Absolutely. It was a real failure of leadership at almost every level, not only at the White House, as we've discussed, but I think among Democrats, you know, this is maybe the deepest reservoir of talent in the Democratic Party in generations. I mean, they've got amazing talent on the bench ready to get in the game, but none of them did. I think they were intimidated by the fact that you had a president at least on paper, a very successful first-term record. He had an enormous victory of sorts in the midterm elections, defied all the expectations, and that just snowballed. And I think that nobody had the guts to stand up, with the exception of an obscure character named Dean Phillips. Nobody had the guts to step up and challenge Biden. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, you can ask, or you could have asked Ted Kennedy, who challenged Jimmy Carter in 1980, and even with a hostage crisis, that did not end well for Kennedy. But someone should have stepped up under the circumstances, I think.
Mm. And finally, the whole question of whether or not Joe Biden's legacy will change. At the moment, it looks pretty tarnished, but whether or not he will be vindicated by the behavior of Trump. If Trump turns out to be as vindictive as he has indicated himself he will be, then Joe Biden's pardoning of his own son, Hunter, and other members of his family, which might be seen to tarnish his legacy, some of his successes may become more burnished with the passage of time in terms of the green agenda and all of that. That the legacy we might write from today might be very different from the one that will be written after Trump 2.0.
I think that Biden's legacy will probably improve over time, much the way Jimmy Carter's improved in the decades since he was in office. Carter had a much more consequential presidency than he was given credit for. Joe Biden has certainly had a consequential presidency. I don't think the pardons will really be a much of a, you know, maybe a blemish on his record, but pardons are always messy and controversial, and in this case, thoroughly justified by the threat that Trump poses to the people Biden pardoned. So I don't think that's much of a black mark. But I do think that in the end, Biden will never escape the reality that by failing to acknowledge his age and his infirmity, that he opened the door for the return of Donald Trump. And that's going to be in the first, if not the second, sentence of his obituary.
And the final question really is about the Democrats, who appear to have lost their way in terms of what most people are perceiving maybe a too woke agenda. How can the Democrats remain true to themselves and yet win back much of the hinterland that they've lost to Trump during this election?
Democrats really do need to grapple with this phenomenon that is Donald Trump and the so-called Make America Great Again movement. There's no doubt about it. And one of the things that shocked Joe Biden more than anything else in his presidency was the staying power of MAGA. He thought it would be in the rearview mirror by now. It's not. It's in the driver's seat, and the Democrats need to deal with the fact that the working middle class of the United States has been left behind, is angry, feels it's been neglected, and they need to deal with that. But, you know, I'm just barely old enough to remember when George McGovern lost by 49 states in 1972, and 4 years later, Jimmy Carter was the president. So these things can change quickly.
May I propose a slogan for the Democrats going into the midterms or the next presidential election? Not MAGA, but MADA. Make America decent again.
Well, I hope they're listening. That I've heard worse ideas.
Chris Whipple, author of The Fight of His Life, Inside Joe Biden's White House. Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.